in Chayisora. Medrash says like this. We've spoken about this Medrash in the past. I want to give a little bit of a different approach to it. Rabbi Akiva Hayadoresh. Rabbi Akiva was giving a drasha. Ubikshu HaTalmidim Lenamne. And his students began to go to sleep. Nothing has changed in 2,000 years. And Bikesh La'oraron. He wanted to wake them up. So he said, what did Esther see that enabled her to rule over 127 Medinos? Let Esther, the great-great-granddaughter of Sarah, who lived 127 years, rule over 127 Medinos. So they all woke up. What in the world is there a connection between Esther's 127 provinces and Sarah's 127 years, except it's the same number? And Rabbi Akiva, and the Rabbi Akiva went on. So what was Rabbi Akiva trying to tell them? I want to say that Rabbi Akiva was telling them the following. Rabbi Akiva's students were the first generation after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Very, very hard times for the Jewish people. It was the Dor HaShmad, which resulted in the Asara HaRuge Malchus, the 10 martyrs, amongst whom was Rabbi Akiva. And it was really terrible times. And they really felt that they couldn't accomplish anything. They just gave up. In fact, it says that one of the sins of the students of Rabbi Akiva, why they died, is because they didn't go and spread Torah to the whole Eretz Yisrael. They felt that they were just debilitated. That's what the word nimnum means. Nimnum does not mean to go to sleep. It means that you're awake, but you're not awake. Drimling. If somebody talks to you, you can answer, but you won't initiate anything. They felt they couldn't initiate it. They just felt they gave up hope. Rabbi Akiva's Talmid. And Rabbi Akiva wanted to wake them up. He wanted to arouse them and make them dynamic. So he told them the following. You know, Esther was in the same matzav as you. She also was the first generation after the destruction of the first temple. And she had a pretty miserable life. I mean, she was grabbed away from her husband, her family, from the Jewish people, put into a palace, ended up marrying a goy, which I'm sure were not her aspirations when she attended the Beis Yaakov in Shushan, right, to marry the king of Persia, or to have a child that was legally Jewish, halachically Jewish, but considered himself a Persian, a goy, Koresh. That wasn't exactly the nachas of a Jewish mother. Here's my son, the king of Persia, Koresh. And yet, Esther was able not to give up and not to feel totally debilitated, right? But she was dynamic. And she ruled over 127 Medinos, right? She was able to rise above the situation. How did she do that? Because she looked at Sari Menu. Sari Menu, which says, lived 127 years, and all her 127 years were productive, physically and spiritually. At 100, she was as pure from sin as 20. At 20, she was as beautiful as 7. Every situation in life, she directed and used properly. And that's why it says, Shnei Chayei Sara, that all of her years were equally for the good. Now that can't be taken literally, that they all equally were good, because they weren't. Because the 90 years she was barren weren't equally good with the 37 years she had Yitzchak. And the night she was dragged to Avimelech or to Paro weren't equally good with the day they celebrated Yitzchak's bris. But it doesn't say they were equally good. It says they were equally for the good. Meaning, you can't control the situations that come your way. But you can control how you react to them and how you deal with them. That's in your power, right? And therefore, Sarah had many difficult times come to her in her life. But she was able to rule over herself and be the quintessent queen. Malchus, royalty, is not how many people you can rule over. Shurei Das says that the last Tsar of Russia, Tsar Nikolai, ruled over millions of people. Yet he was afraid to sleep in the same room for more than 15 minutes at night because he was afraid he was going to be assassinated, which in the end he was. So every 15 minutes he had, his servants wake him up, move to another room so they couldn't find him. That's a king. That's a slave. So royalty is not how many people you can rule over. It's how well you can rule over yourself and control not the situations that come your way, but how you deal with them, how you react to them. And that's what Sari Mena was able to do. All of her life she channeled towards the good, and she saw that even difficult situations can be an opportunity, a challenge, but not to make someone feel to give up hope or to be debilitated. That was what Esther learned from Sara Imenu. And therefore, she was able to acquire the quality of Malchus, of royalty, of being in control in all situations, and she was able to rule over 127 Medinos. So Rabbi Akiva told his students, true, your lives are not easy either. And the situations you have to deal with want to push you to not being active, to be inactive, feeling, giving up hope. But you can learn from Esther and you can learn from Sara that even under the most difficult situations, you can still use them as opportunities and challenges, not necessarily something that's going to put you to sleep and make you inactive. That's the way I understand the Medrash. What does it have to do? You know that I went to Chutz Lawrence. So let me tell you what my itinerary was and what lessons I learned from this trip that's relevant to what we just spoke about, and also relevant to not this week's Sedra, but coming Sedra after that, Vayetze, which I'll get to in a second. Let me tell you the story first. We left here to go to Heathrow and get a plane to Scotland. I have a son-in-law and daughter, and mainly three grandchildren in Scotland who just went there in Elul to do Kiruv. My son-in-law was a student of mine in Or Lagola. He was also a student of mine in my yeshiva. He happened to marry the Rosh Yeshiva's daughter. But in any case, he went through Or Lagola, and you have to go 2 years to Chutz Lawrence to do Kiruv. So he found a position in Scotland, in Glasgow, and he is basically the chaplain for the British chaplaincy, the United Kingdom chaplaincy in Scotland. He travels to all the universities, and Baruch Hashem is doing a nice job. But we haven't seen them except on Skype, so we decided that since I have to be in Chicago and in New York, we'll stop in Scotland on the way. And so we get to Heathrow, and our connecting flight is 6 hours later. Now, England is different than America. In America and in Israel, you can go to the supermarket and find things with Hechsherim on them. In England, that doesn't exist. You have to have a little book, which I had with me, that tells you what's kosher and what's not kosher. Unfortunately, most things there are not kosher. And I could find, maybe we found a bottle of Coke and a bag of potato chips. That's what we had for the 6 hours we were there. In any case, after 6 hours, we already checked in, got our boarding passes way in advance, and we're ready to get onto the plane to go to Scotland. And they put our boarding pass under that little laser light, and the woman says, sorry, you're not checked in. I said, well, we're not checked in. We've been here for 6 hours. And the woman herself said, yeah, I know, I saw you already here 2-3 hours ago. She said, somebody made a mistake, and the computer didn't pick up your boarding card. She said, so you can't get on the plane. There's no room. So we begged. I said, look, my grandson's waiting to see me, and so you're going to have to get on the next plane. So the next plane is an hour and a half. Okay, Nishka Ferlich, an hour and a half, but he's going to be asleep already, my grandchildren. I'm missing a whole night. So they said, don't worry, we're going to compensate you. Not a lot, but we'll compensate you for your bother, for the mistake that somebody made. So they put us in a lounge and till the next plane, and they gave us 102 pounds each. That was a nice compensation. That was like $300 for waiting an hour and a half. Now I had money to give my children when I get to Scotland, and I wouldn't know where I was going to get pounds from. The American Airlines gave me $300, 200 pounds, just like this. Okay. So what appeared to be very upsetting in the beginning turned out to be very, very nice. Okay. Next, that's just the beginning of the trip. Okay. So we spent Shabbos with our children. Sunday we were back to Heathrow to get a connecting flight to New York. Unfortunately, Sunday was the night that Hurricane Sandy hit. And we figured that the hurricane's not coming till the night. We're going to get on the plane and get to New York before the hurricane hits, so we get to Heathrow, they canceled our flight, along with a lot of other flights. Long lines waiting to reschedule whatever. I wanted to get to New York. I had to be in Chicago Thursday night, but I had a week that we wanted to do shopping in New York or whatever. And we were supposed to stay by friends of ours in Far Rockaway. In any case, so they canceled the flight. Finally, we get to reschedule. There's nothing till Wednesday. You can go to, where were we supposed to go to? I don't remember now. Somewhere, and then from there to New York on Wednesday. But the American Airlines said, we will put you up in a 5-star hotel right near the airport for the next, till your flight. So 2 days we had to suffer in the Renaissance Hotel, realizing that had we made it to New York, the basement that we usually stay in by these friends was flooded. They weren't in their house because they had no power, right? So it would have been terrible. We had nothing to do there. So it was good that they canceled the flight. We spent 2 days in a hotel. Then the second night, they put a thing under the door. That's it, right? You're on your own. So we figured, you know what? Instead of going to New York, which is the little tachlis to go to New York anymore, and Wednesday we could have gone. I don't remember, to Detroit, not to what's it called, to Madrid or something, and then to New York or something. I don't remember exactly what the thing. We'll go directly to Chicago. Go early to Chicago. We get to the airport. There's no room on any planes to Chicago. However, we can go standby. And the woman at the ticket counter was Jewish. Obviously, we look Jewish, so she picked up on that. And she started saying all the Hebrew words that she knew, mazel and this and that or whatever. So she writes something special on our standby. We come, and all the people on standby, they send to one area, and us, they tell us, go to a different area. We're waiting, and finally they tell them we have a place for you on the plane, but unfortunately it's in business class. So we flew business class to Chicago. Get to Chicago, and Baruch Hashem, they have the same stores in Chicago as they have in New York, so my wife was able to do the shopping she wanted to do. And then we left Chicago, went to New York on Sunday, had 2-3 days there. These people who we were going to stay with in Far Rockaway were staying by relatives of ours in Staten Island, so that worked out very nicely. And then we had to come back. So we got to the airport on Wednesday, and there's another storm, snowstorm.
Yeah.
So we sat in the airport for 6 hours. We were supposed to leave at 6 at night. We didn't leave till like 5 in the morning, and we were supposed to get into Eretz Yisrael Thursday night. We got in early Friday morning, 6 o'clock in the morning instead. I'm still waiting to hear what the good part of that was. It must have been everything along the way. The point is, we learned a tremendous lesson there. Two lessons. One is, the Five Towns is a place that is not a place for poor people. People who are pretty much well off, whatever, drive very nice cars. On the other hand, a little rain and wind put them out of commission completely. Completely. The people we were staying by lost 2 cars from the rain. Just, they were complete, totaled. Their basement was flooded. We, in fact, left some things there because we stay there whenever we go. And miraculously, the water came up to the shelf where our things were, and that's it. So all of our things were safe. In any case, but here you see that people are not in control. A little wind and rain, there's nothing you can do about it. And there's still people sitting in the dark, in the cold, because they don't have electricity yet. So with all the modern technology and with all the money in the world, you know that the Ribbono Shel Olam is Maisa in charge. And for all the things that happen to us, where you make all the plans and everything, you have your itinerary, and nothing goes right. And yet, when you feel that it's really bad, it turns out to be really good. You don't always see it right away. But that's the situation. That's what it says. The Tzelzer Rosh Yeshiva, when they came to America, the brothers-in-law, Rav Chaim Mordechai Katz and Rav Lemeir Bloch, were sent to try to bring the yeshiva over to America during World War II, before the Nazis would come to Lithuania. Just like the Mir Yeshiva went to Shanghai. While they were here, they were stuck, because the war broke out, and the Nazis overran Lithuania. They lost complete contact with their families, and they didn't know what was going on for about a year. And then finally the news came that their families had been destroyed. One lost 10 children, the other one 11 children, and a wife. And the Tzelzer Shiva, in the first shmooze that he gave after they got up from Shiva, he said the following. He said, by Yaakov, it says, Vayetze Yaakov biber Sheva, Vayelech Haran. So he left Beersheva and he went to Haran. Could have just said Vayele Charona. What's Vayetze? Says that he said the following. He said that when David HaMelech and Yonasan were devising a code to know if Shaul wants to kill him or not, if he has to run away or he's safe, so he told him he's going to shoot an arrow, and if it's, he tells the boy, it's farther than you, you know you're in trouble. If not, then you can come out, everything's okay. So he tells him, what's it called, if I tell you that the arrow, if I yell out to the boy, the arrow's past you, you know that's the code that my father wants to kill you, and you better get out of here. And the way he describes it is, Leich kishilachecho Hashem. Go, because God sent you. He tells Rosh Yeshiva, when God sent you. Go, because my father wants to kill you. So if you see situations are bad situations, then you have to understand that the Ribbono Shel Olam is telling you something. And he's putting you in a situation where he wants you to be somewhere else. So it's not, don't run away from Shaul. You're going because God is telling you that you have to go. Right? So every situation is not a situation where, again, you can't control the situations. But you can look at it as a challenge and an opportunity and realize that somehow, if you are strong enough, you'll be able to deal with every situation that comes your way. That's what Rabbi Akiva was telling his Talmidim.